This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about the economy. Megyn Kelly's going to join us. Nick Freitas, Mike Cernovich. We are packed tonight on I'm Right. There is something I really want people in Washington, D.C. to understand. I understand it because I don't live in Washington, D.C. I don't hang out with political people. I have friends in politics, of course, but I live in Texas. I hang around normal people. It's who I talk to. My private life, it's what I do. People in Washington, D.C. do not understand this very, very simple concept, and this is why I scream about it all the time. Americans can't afford things anymore, and they remember what it was like to afford things. It's not as if it's some distant memory so far in the past you can hardly see it. We just had a chart come out, saw a chart this week. Since January, I'm going to make sure I read this. Since January of 2021, that's 5 years ago, cumulative inflation is between 23 and 25%. Also, wages have been flat. Now, there's an obvious reason why we have that inflation. We don't have to go into that in any depth right now. We've talked about it a million times. When you look at your economy and you press stop, and then print $7 trillion, that's going to happen. I did whatever I could do to try to stop that from happening. They didn't listen. Now that's where we are. Set that aside. The truth is that 5 years ago, you could afford more things than you can now. The American people, they go to the grocery store, and they are upset because they can't afford things. That when they look at buying a plane ticket somewhere, they are upset. They can't afford things. A home remodel. Maybe it would have cost you $5,000 before. Now it's $10,000. And they can't afford things. They can't afford shoes. They can't afford cars. They can't afford gas. And I need to stress this again to everybody in Washington, D.C. who listens to this show. Every single person. In fact, everyone in politics. I need to stress this again. They remember what it was like to be able to afford those things. It was like yesterday they could go to the grocery store and fill up the cart. Like yesterday they could get that plane ticket, do that home remodel, and today they can't. We have people suffering economically in this country. The job market is absolute crap. Again, I don't have friends who work in politics. I mean, I don't hang out with people who work in politics. I have a bunch of people roughly my age. A bunch of them have children who have graduated from college or are about to graduate from college or are trying to go into the jobs market right out of high school. And all of them, every single one, has horror stories to tell. He can't find anything. She can't find anything. Resumes. Can't even get a call back. And again, I want to stress, we remember what it was like when people could find jobs. This is what I've tried to stress over and over and over and over again. I have stressed it at Republicans in general, at the House of Representatives, at the Senate, at Donald Trump himself. I've stressed it over and over and over and over again. People need to think that you are on this problem. Even if you can't solve this problem, and I believe that we can solve some of this problem, we're probably never getting inflation back down to where it was. I realize that. Even if we can solve some of this problem, we need to. But the people need to hear from our elected leaders day after day after day after day that they are trying to solve this problem. You see this one? Home sellers now outnumber buyers by 630,000, the largest gap ever recorded. People are trying to sell their homes. People can't afford to buy homes. People today, they watched their parents buy a house. Maybe out of high school, get a job for a few years, maybe graduated college, save up a little bit, buy a house. People today are looking at their bank account, or wait, it'll be on our phone now. People today are looking at their bank account, what they're saving, what they're not saving, And it's not that buying a home seems like, well, it's a few years off. Buying a home seems completely unobtainable. People don't think they're ever going to own a home. And the messaging, here was Trump.
People are getting refunds of $5,000, $8,000, $11,000 that they had no idea they were getting. It's turned out to be better, as good or better than I said it would be.
Is that going to be enough to offset the increase in gasoline prices?
It will be, because gasoline's coming down very soon and very big.
So you think gas prices will be lower before the midterm elections?
I think they'll be much lower before midterm, much lower, yes.
Okay. Now, you've suggested...
I mean, that's on the assumption that we stop a country that cannot have a nuclear weapon from... If you give Iran a nuclear weapon, you want to see bad stock markets? You won't have a country. The world will be blown up. You can't do it. When this is over, I think the stock market is going to boom. It's already booming. Again, nobody thought we could be at 50,000 during my four terms on the Dow, or 7,000 on the S&P. And we hit numbers that nobody thought possible.
The Dow? People don't want to hear about the Dow. They can't afford groceries. It reminds me of when Pam Bondi was asked some hard questions, and she gave this answer.
The Dow right now is over. The Dow is over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. You're a great stock trader, as I hear, Raskin. The Dow is over 50,000 right now. The S&P at almost 7,000, and the NASDAQ smashing records. Americans' 401ks and retirement savings are booming. That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about making Americans safe. We should be talking about, what does a Dow have to do with anything? That's what they just asked. Are you kidding?
Mr. Jordan, Mr. Jordan.
Committee.
You remember how the Biden administration was trying to message a very poor economy. How did I describe them all the time? Cold? This was cold.
Bidenomics, Biden's formula for strong economic growth from the bottom up, it's so much greater than even the experts in economic stuff expected it to be.
How are you feeling tonight? Are you feeling confident tonight? The Biden administration is crediting Bidenomics.
The economy is great. It's the Goldilocks economy. I don't recall an economy that is this good.
Our economy is doing so well.
But guess what? It's working.
Bidenomics is working.
Bidenomics is working. It is actually working.
My God, really is morning in America right now.
From your lips, Cornell, Bidenomics is changing their lives for the better.
Most economists fear the most that the United States economy is too strong.
We haven't seen an economy like this, and the Biden administration has been more successfully economically than the New Deal.
The Bidenomics, this has been the greatest economic growth of any country in the world.
You know how that sounds when your kid can't find a job, your credit cards are maxed out, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm never going to buy a home? It sounds cold. It sounds like you're out of touch and you don't care. Not saying Donald Trump has the power to turn the whole thing around. He does not. He's one man, even though he's the president. Not saying that. But what I am most definitely saying to Trump, to Republicans, because I don't want Democrats to win back the House, and I definitely don't want them to win back the Senate, Republicans have got to start talking about these issues pretty much exclusively. They don't want to hear about Iran. They don't want to hear about Venezuela. Hey, we might stop by Cuba. Please stop. Come home so the American people who are suffering feel like you're working for them. It's time to come home. Talking to Megan about that right now. Joining me now to discuss all these things, the wonderful Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show, which is on the Megyn Kelly channel. Megyn Kelly's just freaking everywhere now, and we are better off for it. Megyn, inflation sucks. People can't buy houses. People have lost 25%, 27% of their income in 5 years. And it doesn't feel, this might be wrong, but it doesn't feel like anyone in Washington is really trying to fix it. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy.
They're focused on Iran. That one soundbite by President Trump at the Easter luncheon that wasn't supposed to be public but was inadvertently posted online said it all. You know, President Trump said to those in attendance before they pulled the clip, but it's out there. You know, we've played it on our show. Others have too. Is very telling. He says, look, the federal government really can't do anything other than military. Medicaid, Medicare, daycare, all that stuff has to be handled at the state level. We're focused on military. Okay, I mean, that wasn't exactly the promise when he ran. I felt like there was a promise that he was going to do something in particular on inflation. It is the main thing that differentiated him from Joe Biden in the eyes of the working class, for example. They thought he could do something, and then Kamala Harris, and she couldn't. And now he's done very little, right? He did the tariff scheme, which he said, give me time, give me time, give me time. They've given him a lot of time, and they're still hurting. Now, look, it does take a while for, you know, these things like deregulation and drill, baby, drill and so on to kick in. But people don't really have that much patience when it comes to paying their bills. And that's one of the reasons why what's going on in the Middle East is hurting him so badly, is because he seems like he's not even focused on it now. He's focused on Iran instead of Iowa.
Yeah, I've said, Megan, that I feel like one of the things that's hurting him a lot is, for better or for worse, every time he gives a press conference now, he's discussing Iran. How are we doing in Iran? Are we getting out of Iran? Iran this, Iran that. So every time the working class person turns on the television set, the president's discussing a place clear around the world, doesn't necessarily feel cared for.
You nailed it. That's exactly it. And on top of that, there's a related problem, which is all of the news media is dedicated to Iran right now. It's the biggest story. That's what happens. Newsrooms put all of their resources on it every day, no matter where you go, podcast, radio, TV, cable, what have you. It's all Iran. Iran, 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 Iran. So the people at home are like, why do I know everything about the Strait of Hormuz? Who gives a shit? No one cares about the Strait of Hormuz, right? They care about themselves, their own lives, their kids, their safety, their pocketbooks. They do not care about what fourth person in command is now doing the negotiations to make things happen with Iran or through the prime minister of Pakistan or any of this crap. They don't understand why we're over there to begin with, because President Trump never took the time to sell the deal. So it's a resentment that builds, because everywhere they go, this is all they can hear about now. You know, the couple of things that might percolate through are like some massive tragedy that happened, you know, like this psycho who tried to kill a woman's toddler at Walmart. Like, what? Holy, what's that about? How'd that happen? Or you get news on illegals who are committing more crime on our streets. That's a reminder of what we're not focused on. So yeah, you feel the frustration building, and who can blame them? You know, like, people are genuinely hurting. They've been hurting for a long time, thanks to Joe Biden. And Trump really promised them, remember the what was written in the arenas when Trump would go and do his rallies? Trump can fix it. Trump can fix it. Like Bob the Builder, you know? Remember that? Your kids, when they were little, ever watched that? Bob the Builder, can he fix it? That was Trump. Trump can fix it. And, you know, here we are a year in, and he hasn't fixed the worst problems. You know, we've seemed to have rolled back, pulled back on the deportations of the illegals and the arrests of the illegals as well. And we seem to be focused on these, you know, foreign adventures, and inflation is still high, and people still can't afford a mortgage, and now gas prices are higher, diesel's higher, and that's only going in one direction, Jesse. He told Maria Bartiromo on Sunday that the gas prices might be higher by the midterms. You know, I hope not, but they could be higher. Then yesterday, he comes out and says, I was misquoted. But like, it was literally a soundbite. We all heard you on camera. You said exactly that. How are you misquoted? It wasn't some off the record thing. You were on cam saying it, saying, no. Now they're going to be lower. Well, that's not what any economic expert says. They all say, including our pal Eric Bolling, who's a big Trump supporter. He would not lie to us about Trump in a way that's bad for Trump. And he made his fortune in oil and gas trading on Wall Street for 30 years, who said oil's likely to go up over 110 or to 110 a barrel, and that the prices that will follow at the pump and everywhere, because the economy starts at the pump, but it filters out to your groceries and all your other expenses, is only going up over the next 6 to 10 to 12 months. Already it's being felt in Europe. They're a harbinger of things to come here in the States. So the smart odds are that this is only going to get more painful, not less, at least in the next year for Americans. So I don't know if the answer is just to keep gaslighting people over it, or possibly maybe to try to do something about it.
Megan, I don't want to psychologize somebody I don't know and I've never talked to, that would be Donald Trump, but do you think there's an element of screw it, I can't fix it domestically, so I'm just going to go try to win a Nobel Peace Prize or have my foreign adventures. I'm bored at home, can't get the inflation down, because really the president can't really get inflation down. I'm bored at home, so man the ships, we're going to Iran. Is there some, do you think there could be some element to that?
I mean, I think there's something related going on in that he, I think he got drunk on his own wine after Venezuela and the June strike on the Iranian nuclear facilities. And he realized he had these amazing toys in, you know, our military, like our air power and our capabilities, which were so shock and awe in Venezuela and in Iran on the first go-round in June. And Bibi Netanyahu is very clever and saw Trump getting enamored with these toys and the fact that he was commander-in-chief and he got all these accolades for making it happen, and struck while the iron was hot, and Trump fell for it hook, line, and sinker and believed all the lies that Bibi had told other presidents but was rejected on. And Trump, he fell for it, unfortunately. And the reason he fell for it is the same thing that has been a risk on Trump for years, and it's his hubris, you know, his narcissism. They're all narcissists. Everybody who runs for president and becomes president is a narcissist. President Trump, maybe more so than most. It's fine. We've been using it for our own good for many, many years, too. I mean, sometimes it really comes back to help the country. If you can get the country aligned with Trump's narcissism, it works to our advantage. But in this particular instance, I think he really enjoyed the feedback he got after those two adventures and was convinced by somebody who has a totally different agenda than that of the United States that he could do the same in Iran. We know that from the New York Times report that walked us through exactly what happened in the Situation Room. And the next day, Trump's top advisors, from the vice president to the secretary of state to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, told him it was bull. What Netanyahu had said, we would not be able to get in and out. The Iranian regime would not collapse quickly. They would potentially take control of the Strait of Hormuz because they would not be in tatters after a couple of days of bombing, as Netanyahu had suggested. And Trump overruled them because he thought he knew better, and he believed his new BFF, Bibi Netanyahu, was telling him the truth. And we unleashed what we unleashed. And it was a lot more than bombs. I mean, it was a bomb on our own economy that we're still going to be dealing with for quite some time.
Megan, is there a way, if we get things figured out here, if we get things settled, come back home, can we avoid getting just massacred in November? Because I don't want to get massacred in November.
I mean, I think we can still save the Senate. You know, the odds are in the Republicans' favor for the Senate. It's going to be an uphill battle even now for the Senate. Just given the way the map is, you know, the Democrats have to defend more and would have to take more in order to get this net gain of 4 seats to gain control. But, Jesse, if we, God forbid, actually do a ground invasion, it's over. It's over. That's got 7% support among the American people. There's a reason Trump threatened to do it. Civilization will die tonight. And rolled back and made it look like the prime minister of Pakistan had stepped in to be the hero and negotiate a peace. That's not what happened. Quite clearly, we went to him. Quite clearly, we used him to release a statement saying, oh, here are the temporary ceasefire deals. We know that because his statement announcing the temporary ceasefire, he inadvertently tweeted out the header, which was statement by the PM of Pakistan. Now, the PM of Pakistan's staffers don't call him the PM of Pakistan. They call him the PM. And it later came out that he had been coordinating with the White House. So Trump knows that ground invasion is overwhelmingly unpopular and that despite his bellicose threats, he should not do that, both as a military measure and politically. I mean, it will be devastating. But he also can't lose. And so, you know, unfortunately, as with any time you start a war, and this is something that General Stanley McChrystal said early on in this war. He said, if you like the bomb-dropping phase of the war, the Air Force phase, enjoy it, because this is always the good phase. This is always the phase in which the American military looks amazing and the American people feel great about our capabilities. It gets a lot trickier from here. So let's hope for progress in this ceasefire and the negotiations, because the only way we save these midterms, and I don't think there's any saving the House, but if we save the Senate, is to get this wrapped up. Trump's laser-like on the economy from this point forward, trying to, you know, cure the damage that was done. And look, I'm more worried at this point about 28 than I am about the midterms, which I don't feel hopeful about.
All right, Megan, I can't let you go without asking you about Swalwell. Not all the individual accusers and who did what, because who knows how all that's going to pan out. Megan, from a 30,000-foot view, this looks like a Democrat hit job. This looks like, now don't get me wrong, I'm sure he's a complete sleaze and a dirtball, but this looks like a Democrat hit job, knifing him in the back to get him out of the gubernatorial race. Am I crazy?
No, you're so spot on. They're so good at it. I admire it. Mm-hmm. Like, once Nancy Pelosi turns on you, you are freaking toast. She denies having anything to do with it, but let's be honest. Nancy Pelosi's from San Francisco. That's his hometown, too. That's where he's from. It was the San Francisco Chronicle that published the first damning account against him. You're going to tell me that she, as the most powerful Democrat still in America, and certainly the most powerful from California and from San Francisco, had no idea? She had no idea. Okay, sure. Sure she didn't. She decided he needed to be taken out before he became one of the last two against Republican Steve Hilton in a general, and all this stuff dropped then when the last man standing would be a Republican? Oh, hell no. So she, I think, took him out, and she had the power to do it, and she had the resources to do it, and she knew exactly when to do it. And now Team Blue will consolidate behind maybe this lunatic Tom Steyer, who wants to put ICE agents in jail and abolish the rest of the agency. Or maybe it's going to be my favorite, Katie Porter, who I really hope is the one. Get the out of the shot. Sorry. She's my fave. She'll be fun for us to cover for 4 years, Jesse, if we have to do it. Yeah. And that, I mean, look, you can't argue with the wisdom of the move politically. And it turns out he was obviously some kind of a dirtbag. So, you know, on principle, it works too. But respect, because it was well done.
I'm rooting for Katie Porker. I just, it would be too much good. It'd be too much fodder for the show.
It's right? Gotta be Katie. Megan, we deserve this.
You're the best. We do. We do. Megan, come back soon. I love you. All right. We have other things. We're going to talk to Mike Cernovich in a moment. But we talk to Mike. Let me talk to you about your testosterone. I just got my blood work back a few days ago. Told you about this. I'm 44 years old. Testosterone levels through the roof. How's that humanly possible? I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day. Every single day. I eat my breakfast, I drink my water, and wash down a male vitality stack from Chalk. 90 days. I'm not asking you for a lifetime commitment. Take it for 90 days and see how you feel. You're not going to need blood work to know something good is happening. Your energy, your focus, natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
I know the system better than anybody. All of that money that's going to Hillary and Jeb and Scott and Marco and all of them, the people that are putting up that money are, it's like puppets. Bing, bing. You saw that. They had it on Jimmy Fallon. I better not do it anymore. The bing, bing, bang, bang, boom. I was imitating puppets, and I said, maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. But it's true. They're totally controlled by special interests, lobbyists, and donors. They're totally. When a guy gives $1 million, and much more than that, you know, some give much more, but do you think they're talking about, like, nothing? They're talking turkey. They're talking lots of different things. And with me, I don't need anybody's money. I don't want anybody's money.
Okay. That's good. Joining me now, Mike Cernovich, author, filmmaker, my buddy. Mike, It feels like sometimes Donald Trump is not doing the things Donald Trump wants to do, and maybe someone else is pushing things. Am I imagining this?
Well, everybody's pushing. And what I find frustrating is when you mention anything that you want, or I mention what I want, the replies are a chorus of, how dare you ask for things? How dare you, Jesse Kelly, say that you disagree with something? You have to just trust a plan. But nobody ever says that of the donor class. The donors are going to push for things. The base is going to push for things. But under this bizarro slave morality that people are under, we can't say anything. But the donors, of course, can push for whatever they want. Rupert Murdoch can push for what he wants. He can use his media outlets to push Trump in a certain direction. But we can't.
Do you feel like somebody has pushed Trump away from really the core America First agenda? I mean, it seems like he's hardly at home anymore. And I don't mean that physically. I know he's physically in America much of the time, but he's always some other place and talking about some other place. And that's not why he got elected.
He's definitely in a media ecosystem around staffers and everywhere else around him is pushing for what the big donors want. The big donors, we always knew that the big donors were going to have their ask. Nobody was naive. I think it gets a little bit annoying when people treat us like we're all naive. The donors, they wanted their war in Iran. That was obvious. And it's not just Israel, Israel, Israel all the time. It's defense tech companies, it's software companies, it's big tech, it's Raytheon, it's the military industrial complex. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that. The big money, $1.5 trillion for Pentagon budget, that's not going to Israel, right? And I don't want to be here defending Israel. God, that's the last thing in the world that my job is. But that's the pressure around Trump. Those are the forces around Trump. It's all the big money. And then when we lost Charlie, we lost a bulwark to the donor class. So what a lot of people misunderstand about Charlie Kirk was, you and I, we all like Charlie. Charlie was a diplomat. Charlie tried to keep the peace. When the kids fought, Charlie would try to end the bickering. But everybody was still going to do their own thing. Charlie's real power was keeping the donor class from exerting undue influence. He was that bulwark. And when we lost Charlie, that was gone. That's gone. So we don't have anybody who can call Trump in the way that Charlie could.
Okay, well, we need one, Mike. I mean, because I've heard this before, and it obviously is true that Charlie was the one carrying my message, your message, the message of people to Donald Trump, and he had his phone number. He's there texting him. Well, I realize you can't replicate Charlie Kirk, and they assassinated him, but we've got to have that guy because big donor Donald Trump is not going to cut the mustard.
Well, and then we all suffer. That's the problem. There, I'm seeing a number of people claim that we should not vote in the midterms because we have to punish the Republican Party, not realizing the GOP, they want, that's what they want. That would be a big win for them.
Yeah. We just learned, changing the subject to something else horrible, the Biden DOJ did something so insanely evil, I can't believe it's already out of the news. They threw a hissy fit after Roe versus Wade got overturned and then just started locking up pro-lifers as fast as humanly possible, working with pro-abortion groups. I don't think people understand that that's coming back again if Democrats take power again, and they'll do worse next time. They're not sorry.
Yeah, the FACE Act prosecutions, I remember I talked about that a lot years ago when it was completely under the radar, other than LifeSite. It was either life. It was one of those pro-life media outlets that wasn't connected to the big nonprofit people making a ton of money. Big surprise there. The people who raised money off of pro-life are the ones who were not hardly at all talking about the FACE Act prosecutions, and they were atrocious. These people were sentenced to 8 years in prison, grandmas, for praying in front of a abortion clinic. It sounds like a lie. That's how crazy the Biden era was. It sounds like a lie, but then of course we get these files, and the files show that. In one instance, the prosecutor complained that the magistrate judge was a Catholic, and he went on to say that this Catholic magistrate judge is going to impose a lot of restrictions on us, the government, and make sure that we don't impede on the First Amendment rights of the person arrested. I don't know. That sounds fake, right? I mean, it literally sounds fake. If you're not a high information voter, and that's of course the big problem right now, losing Trump and losing the bully pulpit, is if you're not a high information voter, you would say, wait a minute, they put in an email that they're mad that they got a Catholic magistrate judge and the judge told them to respect the First Amendment rights of the people that were arrested. That's made up. That's fake, right? Sounds complete. Everything we talk about sounds fake. And the downstream voter doesn't have any idea of this. They're looking at gas prices. They're looking at other issues. So the comms team in Trump has changed significantly. I don't want to get into the who's who or whatever. That just always causes more problems than it solves. But the comms team has changed. The messaging has changed. Trump is writing these screeds against people who helped them in 2024. Honestly, who cares, right? That's the way I look at all this stuff is you're the president. Let people do their podcasts about you. There are other things you need to worry about. But the comms team is going to put these ideas into Trump. So the comms team has as much power as the donors. The donors have a lot of power, but the comms team is with them all day. Oh, have you seen this, Trump? Have you seen this, Mr. President? Have you seen this? Oh, look at this. Look at that. The team inside there is not the same team that it was when Trump started off.
What's the Stop Nick Shirley Act?
Oh. Again, the Stop Nick Shirley Act is another thing you read and you assume that it's fake because as with the FACE Act prosecutions, you would think it can't possibly be real. And what they want to do is criminalize investigative journalism into fraud. That's it. That, again, sounds fake, sounds obscene, but that's the goal now is to end the fraud.
Mike, you those are two a women California were innocent, resident. By the way.
Just for the record, Mike, whatever those two women on the video
were.
Yeah,
very, very innocent. Must be innocent. Yeah, of course. You are a California resident, and I've been telling people who have been shocked by the Minnesota fraud that Minnesota is nothing compared to what they're actually going to find in California. How corrupt is your state?
Every blue state, Illinois, Maine, it's Texas, your state, with the H-1B visa issue that Sarah Gonzalez and other people were finding. The scale, of course, is different here because there's more NGOs to launder, but I wish that there was a red utopia where none of this was happening because I'm constantly warning people with not a lot of success. Have you looked into Utah and their senator? Have you looked into Utah and their governor? Have you looked into the migrant resettlement happening in Utah? These are red states, man. We are going to lose everything. That's why Trump and the Pope, that beef, I would have worded it differently. Again, that goes to the comm staff. A different comm staffer would have shaped the message with the Pope quite differently because you would say, hey, guys, this is the Pope. All right? Everything we're going to say is going to be true, but there's a time and a place to word things acrimoniously. And again, that falls on the comm shop. So we're problems, man. I'm stressed out, to be completely honest. Not about the fraud, but about the structural issues coming up.
Yeah, me too. Mike, be good, my man. Come back soon. Virginia's a mess too. Talk about stressed out. Nick's going to join us next. We'll have a little discussion about that before Nick joins us. Let's save you some money. Since, as we talked about in the opening, the economy is a little tough right now. Looks like it's going to remain tough. So how do you beat inflation? You find ways to save money. You're spending too much on your cell phone. Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, they're charging you way too much. You don't have to spend that much. You can switch to the company that loves America, and they'll charge you way less. My bill got cut in half when I switched from T-Mobile to Pure Talk. Plus, they hire Americans, and that is really important to me. I hope it's important to you. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. What's happening to Virginia saddens me. Maybe you haven't spent much time in Virginia. I lived there for a year. It's freaking beautiful. Beautiful. Really cool state. Amazing history. And they elected a dirty commie, and she's trashing the place. Joining me now is someone who knows a little something about Virginia. Former Virginia delegate, Green Beret, combat veteran, Nick Freitas, also has a book, The Man Book, which we will get to in a bit. Hey, Nick, how are things in Virginia?
Not doing too great, actually. It's actually pretty frustrating, but it's also incredibly predictable if you know anything about Abigail Spanberger and the rest of the people that got elected to unfortunately lead Virginia.
Nick, can you walk those of us on the outside through this? Because you had this nutball McAuliffe as governor, and then it was like Virginians woke up and decided they didn't want any more communism. You get Glenn Youngkin in there. Things from the outside looked like they were going pretty well. And then, boom, commie hag. What is going on?
Yeah, the problem is for 2 years, Democrats were in the same situation that they are now. They controlled everything. And they did about as much nonsense in 2 years as you could possibly cram into the space. And then Virginians rebelled. We put the Republicans back in charge in the House. When we had an opportunity to elect a governor, attorney general, and lieutenant governor, we put Republicans back in power. But the Democrats still controlled the Senate by one vote. And what they ended up doing was obstructing just about everything Governor Youngkin could do legislatively. So he was able to accomplish a lot on the executive side, but nowhere near as much as we wanted to on the legislative side. And then all of a sudden, we had about 300,000 Republican voters that just decided they were frustrated, they were angry, and so they stayed home. And for all the people that think that there's no difference between the parties, we're now finding out, turns out there's a difference between the parties, especially with Abigail Spanberger, because she has mastered the art of saying one thing during the campaign and doing something entirely different when she gets into power. She did this when she was in Congress. She's now done it as governor. And I'm looking at these people going, especially the people like, well, no, she's a moderate, Nick. She's a moderate. Oh, okay. Did she put on her campaign mailers that as soon as she got into power, like the first thing she would do is stop cooperating with ICE? And when you consider in places like Fairfax County, where they like to arrest illegal immigrants multiple times for violent crimes, and then Steve Descano lets them back out on the street, and then they murder someone, and then you're like, okay, now will you cooperate with ICE? And Abigail Spanberger's like, nope. Absolutely not. Nobody voted for that, but that's what they got. Because Democrats are never going to fully campaign on what they want to do. They wait till they're in power, and then they do it all, and Republicans are left wondering, how did this happen? Well, that's how.
Nick, how do we campaign against evil that is so willing to be evil that way? I mean, and you know what I'm talking about, the low-info voters. How do we point to them and say, that Democrat's lying. Everything she's saying is lying. She's lying. She doesn't mean it. She's lying. It seems like such an uphill battle to fight.
Well, it is. And let's face it, if you're a conservative, if you're a Republican, if you're a libertarian, and you say things like, I love the Constitution, or I want limited government, well, then it's incumbent upon you to understand how we actually attain those things. And I have no problem with people being mad at Republicans. I spent a good part of my time, both in office and out of office, mad at Republicans. But once the answer becomes letting Democrats take power, this is the sort of nonsense you end up with. And so here's the thing that I would ask everyone to do that's frustrated with their politics. First of all, the parties are not the same, and not all politicians are the same. We've got some great people in the Virginia legislature that are fighting this. You've got people like Delegate Karen Hamilton, Tim Griffin, Tom Garrett, Phil Scott, Eric Zur in the Senate. You got people like Bryce Reeves. These guys are fighting this, right? So don't lump them in. But then you have other Republicans, usually from very safe districts, that won't fight anybody. Those are the people you need to primary. You start primarying the Republicans that are not fighting, you're going to get better ones. But for the love of God and all that is holy, don't get angry at Republicans and give Democrats power, because they will destroy your state in record time. And that's what we're seeing going on in Virginia right now.
Tell me about the Man Book.
So the bottom line is that if you've been paying attention at all, or if you've been talking to young men at all over the last 20 years, they have just been consistently dumped on by the left for at least two decades now. They've been told they're the source of all the world's problems, that, you know, all of their instincts are bad and wrong and toxic. And it's heartbreaking, because you're watching so many young men right now. Some of them are just checking out. Some of them don't know what to do. And what I notice is, when I do my reels, when I do my podcasts, every once in a while I'd have a young man, maybe it's a new father, maybe it's somebody that wants to get married, they'd stop me in the airport. And they would tell me that they just appreciate the insight I gave on raising daughters or raising a son or, you know, navigating the world with my wife. And I said, you know, we probably need something that just walks through the various things that teach men about the various capabilities that they should possess. And we shouldn't do it to preach at them. We should just, it should be an older guy, you know, I'm 46, it should be an older guy saying, hey, I've served in war, I've served in politics, I've owned a business, I've been married for 27 years, been a father for 22. This is some of the stuff I learned along the way. And a lot of it I learned the hard way. But I want you to know that what we need is young men that want to be strong, capable, honorable. I want all those men that recognize that feminism, that wokeism, it's all sold them a bill of goods. And I want them to develop to be strong and capable, to be the leaders that God created them to be. But it's got to be in service to a noble purpose. It can't just be about going out and clubbing. It can't just be about having nice cars or houses. The thing that's going to give you the most identity, meaning, and purpose is recognizing what you owe to God and then actually building something that's worth defending, building that legacy. And young men want to do it. They're frustrated by the current conditions, and I understand that. But what they need to know is the reason why the left targeted them so hard is because they're kind of the key to everything. When young men actually step up and lead and take their God-given position and do so with honor, that's what saves a country. The left knows it. And that's why they've tried to demoralize him. I'm trying to encourage him.
I occasionally get an email to my show of, hey, I wish we still had heroes like we used to have. And I have to explain, every single time I get that, it bothers me. And I explain that we have heroes all over the place and young men capable of becoming heroes all over the place. They weren't just in World War II or Vietnam. It wasn't just in the GWAT, which I know you were part of. They're still there. They're still out there. And if we nurture that, we can save this country. I believe we can.
Oh, we absolutely can. I put it this way. We can save the whole country in one generation. And that's not hyperbolic. Here's what I mean by that. If you look at liberal women, their birth rate among liberal women is 0.51. They're not having enough kids to win in a representative government. That's why they either try to import a population that they can manipulate, or they try to take over educating your kids for you. But if you have godly men and women becoming godly husbands and wives, having a bunch of kids, and not handing them over to liberals for their education, we win. One generation, we win. That's how you actually create the sort of momentum. And so that's what I want men to focus on. It's not that I want them to ignore politics, but I also don't want them to be all black-pilled or go down the doom scrolling. I want them to go out there and focus on the things that they can actually impact and change. Because when they do that, it doesn't change everything overnight, but it can change quite a bit. And again, like I said, one generation and we win.
Nick, are we going to be able to deport enough of these foreigners?
Yeah, I think we also, at the same time that we need to acknowledge things that we're frustrated about with either Republicans or whatever, we also have to acknowledge our wins. And the bottom line is we were having mass importation. It was both illegal and legal because President Biden drastically altered what it meant to be a refugee seeking asylum. And Donald Trump pretty much stopped that on day one. You know, for all the talk about, well, we've got to pass this bipartisan bill in order to get border security, without any new legislation, without any new funds, without any new executive power, Donald Trump stopped that flow almost overnight. And if you look at the numbers, it has been significant. Then when it comes to deportations, the Trump administration has had to forcibly deport, I think, around 700,000 people. Another 2 million have chosen to leave because they didn't want to be forcefully deported. So the message has gotten out, and as much as we might want certain things to go faster, we need to recognize wins when we see them. Because the bottom line is, it is hard for them to do this. If you think about it, every step of the way, Trump has been obstructed by the judiciary. There's been liberal judges that have dropped all kinds of nationwide injunctions. Then on top of that, you have sanctuary cities, you have Democrat mayors, governors, police chiefs, attorney generals, district attorneys, commonwealth attorneys, that's tried to obstruct ICE at every step of the way. And yet, we've still seen significant gains. So again, it's perfectly fine to be frustrated by the areas where we'd like to see more. But if we don't actually acknowledge the wins when we get them, you're gonna completely tire out your own base. And so I do think we have something to actually celebrate with that.
Go buy the man book. Sounds like it's going to be a good one. Nick, I appreciate you, brother. Come back soon. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. I still miss Joe Biden sometimes. And there was just so much about him that made me laugh. Probably the funniest thing about Joe Biden was clearly he's still doing it, is the way Joe Biden panders to black people. All Democrats pander to black people in the most racist, hilarious ways possible. You know that's my favorite thing in politics. But Joe Biden, because he doesn't have a functional brain and he's never really been able to control his mouth, Joe Biden takes, you know, the cringe that might have been at a level 9 and he cranks it up to a level 10. So here was Joe Biden yesterday.
And by the way, I always want to turn around to one guy and say, Barack, what are you doing? Come here. I feel like he should be standing on the right and I should be standing on the left. Hey, you done this look at Barack? Anyway, as I say, you've done good, fella.
Well, you know, I tried.
I miss him. I'll see you tomorrow.